Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Hey, good morning. Welcome. Thanks for popping in, hanging out. Make yourself comfortable. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse. This morning, got a whole bunch of cool stuff to present to you. Before I get into that, I want to acknowledge that this show and all of CJSF's programs are produced on the stolen, unceded lands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples, who have been here getting together, sharing culture and music and art and stories since time immemorial. And I'm very grateful to be able to live in this place and do my own version of that, sharing stories and culture and music and everything I get to do here on the radio. It is Black History Month, February, so we've got a story about a cool event you can attend this Friday called Boots to Broadway. I've got a story about a cool art exhibit, installation, and an accompanying graphic. Well, it's more of a comic, I suppose. It's not quite the length of a graphic novel, but a comic that explains the artwork. And I've got a piece from Danny about a protest outside of Hootsuite headquarters last week. And whatever else I make it to today, we are going to start, as we always do here on my edition of Speak Up on Thursdays, with a little bit of local music. And we're returning to the upcoming record from the golden age of wrestling, Sweet Chin Music. The second single came out 3 days ago, and it's called Map to the Stars. It's got an official video on YouTube if you want to watch it, but for now, let's listen in. Map to the Stars. Map to the Stars by the Golden Age of Wrestling from the upcoming record Sweet Chin Music, which is out February 12th, next week. And I'm sure it will make a big splash here on the CJSF charts. I'm Jesse. This is Speak Up. Our first story of the day comes from, well, I guess Burnaby, but also sort of East Vancouver, where artist Nathan Lee is based. He is the creator of the art installation Hakchu Pakchu, which is at Deer Lake Park in the gardens surrounding the lake outside of Burnaby Village Museum. And is a really cool, well, the art installation itself is very cool, and Nathan describes it, so you'll get that. But the history and context around it is also really, really interesting. And the thing that drew me, well, notified me of this story was the city of Burnaby putting out a comic brochure that sort of personifies and tells the story of a specific art object, well, an artifact that was discovered on the grounds there, and kind of serves as a metaphor for the whole story. So, well, I'll let Nathan give you the details. And once you're done, you can head over to Deer Lake Park and walk around the park and see the exhibit yourself, or pop by the museum or various community centers around Burnaby to grab the comic. And you can read it yourself. There's also a digital version you can find on the City of Burnaby's website. But let's get into the interview, and then I'll give you all the details after.
My name's Nathan Lee. I am an artist and designer living in East Vancouver. This is Century Garden, which is in Burnaby, right next to the Burnaby Art Gallery. And this is where a piece that I worked on some time ago, Hakchu Pakchu, is located on this site.
Can you describe Hakchu Pakchu?
Yeah, sure. Hakchu Pakchu is kind of a series of white and black concrete supersized game pieces that sort of like are integrated into the landscape. So they're sort of peppered around Century Garden, kind of making this historic presence known.
What was the process of being commissioned and designing and installing this piece?
With a lot of public art commissions, there's sort of a short list, and then you put a proposal together. So the proposal was really about this site, and through the proposal process, yeah, this work was kind of developed through that proposal process, and it really came about. I guess the big turning point for me, my background is in landscape architecture, so like site history is very important to my work. It's kind of foundational, like rigorous site history is extremely important. And so in digging into the history of the site, I think what was kind of this really key point for me was this game piece that was found underneath one of the historic buildings on this site. There was a small Chinese game piece that's kind of, after a lot of research, I kind of found out a little bit more about it, but this game piece is associated with games of chance, like Fan Tan. It's kind of like, I think, one of those games that we often think of, but it was used like almost as a poker chip, something that had a denominational value. But like more than the item itself, I think it just was a concrete and physical connection to Chinese-Canadian, early Chinese-Canadian community that had an impact on this site.
And you talked about a lot of research. What is the significance of this site to early Chinese-Canadian culture and history in this area?
There's sort of three levels to the connection to this site specifically. I think the piece sort of speaks to the broader, like, early Chinese immigration, but to this site specifically, there's sort of three areas. One is kind of the early agricultural history. So the land clearing was done by a lot of early Chinese labor at that time, and then also seasonal farming was executed by Chinese immigrants. The second piece is that after this piece of land was turned into, after it was a farm, it was bought by kind of a wealthy couple, the Sepperleys, who lived in that, well, the Burnaby Art Gallery was their summertime home. So, you know, quite wealthy and influential couple. As it turns out, sort of digging a little bit deeper, some of the seed money for this construction likely came from one of the family members who received money from construction of the railway, which again is associated with Chinese labor. And then we also know that they had Chinese laborers on site. And then the third level is really kind of about Century Garden itself. So Century Garden was built when Canada turned 100. It was a centennial project, and it was really about this kind of celebration of Canada and the virtues of Canada. It was also very close to the last year that immigration legislation, specifically against the Chinese population, was repealed. So we can sort of look at those first 100 years of Canada from a different perspective, like who is celebrating those first 100 years and what does that mean to different ethnic groups and different populations?
Right, yeah, because in 1967, the celebration was, I imagine, not having been there, like very focused on sort of white settler Canada.
Well, I wasn't there either, yeah. But I think that's the narrative. That's the narrative, certainly, that comes along with it, yeah.
Did you, and if so, what did you discover that surprised you?
I mean, I think this piece was significant for me in that, like I mentioned before, my background is in landscape architecture and site research is really important to my work. But I think this is the first time that I had a personal cultural connection to the site. And that was really exciting for me. It's changed the trajectory of my work, certainly. I think I'm much more focused on my own heritage exploration through my work than I was before. I think prior to this, I would sort of let the site tell me what the work should be. Finding a little nugget of Chinese history on the site was very exciting for me. I also should mention that this was really kind of a partnership with the city of Burnaby, obviously, but the Burnaby Village Museum, like the actual piece that was found underneath the chauffeur's cottage, they lent me that piece. Well, they didn't lend it. They escorted it to the fabricator, and the fabricator 3D scanned it, and then we supersized it in order to make these pieces. So the idea was to try to really have an accurate as possible representation of that game piece. But I couldn't have done it without the support of the Burnaby Village Museum. So
I want to talk a little bit about the comic as well was just put together. How did that come about?
Oh, yeah, that comic was really fun. That was an initiative that was definitely led by the city. They were looking at ways to kind of, it's a complicated narrative. It's very layered, and it doesn't always fit on a piece of signage. So they were really looking at different ways to sort of tell this nuanced story. Marlene got brought on board, and the idea was that it was kind of a dialogue between artists, and we all talked about it for a while, and the idea of comic book came up. I love that medium as a storytelling medium, as a narrative medium, and it was certainly in Marlene's wheelhouse. So yeah, we kind of came up with this collaboration, and it was really fun and nice way to talk about this work.
In reading it a few times, it really clearly lays out everything, and having the timeline at the end and just the story itself throughout, and characterizing the game piece itself. Really interesting how it can represent the Chinese immigrant diasporic experience just through a game piece.
Yeah, I think that was the idea. We talked a lot about how we were going to tell this story, and the idea of telling it from the perspective of the game piece was kind of a fun and accessible way to express that narrative. One thing that I always strive for in my work is like this, I call it heavy but light, this kind of balance between like, you know, this heavy subject matter, but kind of expressed in a whimsical, fun and playful way. I think the approach kind of breaks down barriers a lot of times when telling really hard stories. It's not an easy story for the city of Burnaby to talk about a darker part of its history. And this year, the city of Burnaby has also recognized that, which is really important. It's an important step. But these are not easy conversations to have. So this is a means of having those conversations and maybe not to make light of it, but in an accessible and sort of playful way.
Mm-hmm. Children are not the only audience, but it does feel like, you know, a kid could read the comic and come away with a more nuanced understanding of the history of this place and of just the story itself.
Yeah, I think that was the idea. My kids were pretty stoked that I got to write a comic book, so that was pretty fun. And yeah.
Yeah. I just think my background is in archaeology.
Okay.
And so the idea of being able to tell stories based on like the things that are left behind or the things that are sort of thought of like garbage or trash or just sort of lost items is always really interesting to me.
I think that was really like that. That piece is really interesting because I think the site in general, there is a strong narrative of the colonial narrative is very strong. There's a recognition of the site history, and the Separately building is, you know, it's a building that's very well preserved, and that narrative finds itself on site through signage a lot. And kind of acknowledging that there are these other layers that are there that happen at the same time and that also influence each other, right? Like the story, the European narrative, the Separately mansion, you know, that was influenced by the Chinese Canadian community, the early immigration community, and that piece of archaeology is really the anchor that it's almost like the proof that there were more people involved here and there were more people that had an impact on the site.
Yeah, and the fact that it's just sort of lost under the floorboards is a really strong metaphor as well.
Yeah, that was a really fun discovery. And when they renovated the chauffeur's cottage, it's just up the way here. But when they renovated it, my understanding is that they kind of just pulled up redid the foundation in one spot. But there's like another spot that's underneath the building that, you know, I've not to encourage your listeners to do this, but I've certainly like poked around and there's still like a lot of garbage underneath there. And that, getting back to that idea of archaeology and those stories, like that garbage like is like centuries of stories underneath there, centuries of artifacts that probably tell a lot of different stories.
And I don't know how much this goes into your, comes up in your artistic process, but what do you hope that people take away from both the sculpture and the comic?
I always think about it as kind of bringing light, unearthing stories and bringing them to the surface. And yeah, just that every place that we occupy has these little stories that are buried under the surface. I really feel like my job is to tease these stories out and bring them to light, you know? And what I hope people take away from it is just that, well, A, history's complicated, and there's always more to a place than what we see on the surface.
Thanks to Nathan Lee for joining me for that interview about his work Hakchu Pakchu and the accompanying comic, which you can pick up all sorts of different places, community centers and the Burnaby Museum at Deer Lake Park. You can go to the burnaby.ca website, burnaby.ca/our-city/about-burnaby/public-art. There's a lot of dashes in there. But there you can find the digital version of the comic, the accompanying comic for Hakchu Pakchu in English, traditional Chinese, and simplified Chinese. That was produced in collaboration with illustrator Marlene Yuan, and it's really cool. It really breaks down the story, both of the Chinese immigrant experience and just sort of the history of Chinese Canadians in Burnaby and in Canada up to the present day, told through the perspective of this little game piece. So I definitely recommend that, and I definitely recommend heading down to Deer Lake Park to walk through the gardens and look at this really cool piece of art, and you can reflect on sort of the history of the area and the people who have been here working and contributing to this place since before it was this place. Yeah, and we'll be right back.
Sources reveal a growing pattern across Vancouver. Residents are leaving home late and ending up somewhere unexpected. In one case, a man with a low phone battery attempted to catch the SkyTrain. He made it onto the platform, but minutes later, his phone died. He continued on foot, hit black ice, slid several feet, and came to rest beside a vehicle with its door open. Still disoriented, he got in. The driver pulled away. Moments later, the man abruptly stepped out at the Black Gold Stepper House Party, February 28, 2026. Tickets and live stream at samchimes.com/events. Stepper Events News, Vancouver.
And check out that cool Black History Month event, the Black Gold Stepper event, samchimes.com. Cool. Okay, up next we have a piece from our local journalist, Danny, whose funding was just renewed for another year. So, woo-woo, another year plus of stories from Danny and the LJI incoming. Last Friday, he attended a large protest outside of the Hootsuite headquarters in East Vancouver. Hootsuite, a social media management company originally founded here in Vancouver that has since grown extremely international, and has some dealings with ICE, the horrible, horrible organization in the United States that is terrorizing Americans. And so there was a large protest of Vancouverites and people in Vancouver protesting the organization's involvement, and our intrepid journalist Danny went and attended and spoke to a bunch of the people there. So we're going to hear that right away. Right away. Here we go.
Reporting from Vancouver, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. The cold afternoon rain had little effect on the crowd of over 800 that gathered outside of Hootsuite headquarters in Vancouver, BC. Since it became widely known that the Vancouver-based tech company Hootsuite had a contract with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the company's been facing increasing public scrutiny, which led to a public protest outside of the Hootsuite HQ on Friday, January 30th. This protest comes during Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, in the United States' ongoing immigration crackdown, which has resulted in increased state violence and arrests in states such as Minnesota, which recently had two separate killings of protesters by ICE officers caught on video. CJSF went down to the rally, where those in attendance were demanding that Hootsuite terminate its contract and all relations with ICE. We spoke with some people outside the Hootsuite HQ about the significance of this protest for them.
I'm here because my grandfather was a prisoner of war in World War II, so he was fighting fascism back in the day, and I see the effect that it's had on my family in terms of generational trauma and how it affected my country. An entire generation of young men went to war, and many of them did not come home, and I would hate for that to happen again. And we're seeing the USA play by the same playbook as what Nazi Germany did. And Hootsuite is complicit in that. And we all need to stand up, and now is the time to stand up. So it's really important to me that we take a stand.
I guess I'm here to just let the company involved know that this is not an okay business decision, I guess, at like a really concrete, practical sense. That's why I'm here. But in general, I think I agree with the majority, I think, of Canadians who don't agree with what's going on and really feel for everyone, for all our neighbors in the South. We're going through this.
Yeah. Thank you. For me, it's just like it's a small way of participating. There's obviously other things we can do, literal boycotts of services and things, but it's hard to know all the different avenues, I guess, I would say. And a lot of it is well hidden, and I know there's ways of finding it out, but you know, just with general busyness, it's a small gesture of solidarity of what we can do. And anything that moves against what's going on down there with the administration is a step in the right direction, I think. And yeah, that's why we're here. Pick up the kids, come to the protest.
I think that what's significant about it is that people often view evil acts or bad things as happening really far away from home and kind of absolve themselves of responsibility without realizing that A, it's happening closer to home than you realize, and B, you can do more than you realize. So everyone has access to some level of power and agency, and it's important that we do everything that we can with whatever access we have. So for us, that's showing up and making sure that people know what's happening in our own backyard, and that neutrality only harms the people who are being harmed. It doesn't help anyone else.
Recently elected leader of the BC Green Party, Emily Lowen, was also in attendance, and we were able to speak with her about the importance of this protest, Hootsuite's response to the public criticism they've received, and how the province should address corporations that collaborate with ICE. This includes the Pattison Group, which was slated to sell one of their facilities in the U.S. to ICE, but had pulled away from the deal earlier that day.
I'm here at the Food Suite headquarters with hundreds of British Columbians to protest their investment in ICE. We saw an incredible victory today with Jim Pattison pulling out of his sale of an ICE facility. And it just shows that people power works, organizing works, and when we can come together as labor unions, as working people and grassroots movements to really force the hand of these massive corporations. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it looks like from what we've heard today, there already has been a bit of a victory even before the next protest at a Pattison facility was supposed to happen, right?
Yeah, so I've shifted the Pattison protest to be more of a public gathering and celebration where we can, you know, discuss what just happened and the next steps. Because we are, I want to see further action from Pattison on this issue. We got a one-sentence press release from them today announcing that they won't go through with the sale. But we do need to see, I think the public needs to see a full disclosure that they don't have any other pending or current sales with DHS or the Trump administration. And so we want to see that sort of transparency, disclosure, and a public commitment to freeze any future action with ICE. Mm-hmm.
Do you think provincially, on a governmental level, anything can be done to address international collaborations such as this that are overall just opposed by the general public?
Mm-hmm. Well, we absolutely need to see provincial review of corporate relationships in the province, nationally. I would love to see more provincial national action on this put forward a clear policy. And I think also this has surfaced a real issue with monopoly laws in BC and in Canada. You know, Jim Pattison has an effective monopoly on much of our food supply. And so I want to see greater provincial action to break up those monopolies and deliver British Columbians good, nutritious food with public grocery stores.
Okay. Do you have anything to say to Hootsuite?
To the Hootsuite CEO, no. People have flooded the streets today demanding that you cut your contracts with ICE. But given the response, the abhorrent response from your company just days ago, I know that only economic pressure will work. So I'm demanding, encouraging that all of your contracts, whether it be companies and municipalities that do business with you, to end their contracts with Hootsuite until further action is taken.